Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Membet Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. The Gemara asks, Boy mine Rav Shmuel bar Bisna me Abaye. Rav Shmuel bar Bisna asked the following question of Abaye. Poletet shichvat zera, a woman who's discharging semen, ro ahavya o nogat havya. Why is she tmeah? Is she tmeah because of the expunging of the shichvat zera, which has a din of ava tumah? And then when it comes into contact with her, it makes her into a Rishon the Tumah. Or is it the sighting of the Shechvat Zera that actually makes her Tmeyah? Just like the sighting of Dam makes her into a Nida, makes her into a Zava. So too, the sighting of the Shechvat Zera would also make her Tmeyah. Navgamina, the difference between whether she is Tmeyah because of Nogat or Tmeyah because of Roah are the following items. Listor. If it undermines her shivanikim, just like we discussed before earlier in the Masechta, in order to be soter shivanikim, you have to have something that is undermining the shivanikim. If you become tamei tumata mate, that does not affect your shivanikim. You are still tahor as regards to the shivanikim, even if you become tamei tumata mate, even if you have other forms of tumah. The only type of tumah that can undermine your shivanikim is if you are having something that makes you not naki, makes you that you're no longer considered to have a day of nikiyut, and that would require a riyah. So only if it's deemed to be a riyah would it have the impact of being soter, undermining the shivanikim. On the other hand, if it was a nigiyah, then it would be like tumata sheret, tumata mate, which has no impact on the shivanikim. Litamei b'mashu, similarly, in terms of the size requirement, if it is a ri'iyah, as we saw in the Mishnah, there is no minimum requirement of shi'ur with regards to ri'iyah. Any sighting whatsoever, even ketipat ha'karda, or even less than that, is considered to be problematic in terms of tumah. And whereas when it comes to tumat maga, there's always a minimum shi'ur that you need in order to be tameh, whether it's a kezayit, ke'adasha, all the different shi'urim that we have in the Torah, there is some minimum size before it becomes tamei, or before you become tamei from coming into contact with it. Ule tamei bifnim ki bachutz. Similarly, the question as to where it makes you tamei is also determined by this question. If you believe it's tumat maga, then tumat maga only takes place once the shechvat zera has exited the woman. It has to come into contact with the woman, but it has to come into contact with the woman in a place that is galui, that is exposed, that is external. And then you have tumat maga. There's no such thing as tumat maga internally. That's tumat beit hasdarim or tumat blua. And we'll see later in today's daf about both of those. But that is not considered to be a negiyah. It would have to exit the woman for her to be tmeah. On the other hand, when it comes to ri'iyah, you've already established as regards to nida and zava for sure. And then a machlok and chachamim and Rabbi Shimon with regards to shechvat zera, that when it exits from bifnim, from the rechem, from the uterus, even though it has not exited the woman, she is considered to be tmeah, tumat nida, tumat zava, and chachamim from the word yeh also learned out that that's true by shechvat zera as well. That as soon as it's discharged from the rechem, even though it has not exited the woman, she is considered to be tmeah. Rabbi Shimon over there suggested that it had to leave the woman in order for it to be a riyah. But here you have three nafkaminot, between whether it's considered to be a ri'iyah or is it considered to be a nigiyah. The Gemara says, Manofshach. Let me understand what the question comes from. Ishmiele matnita, if he heard of the braita is what we brought yesterday, the machloki between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, whereby the Chachamim say that we have three words that teach us by nida, zava, and shechvat zera, that it's mitameh bifnim ki bachutz, and that is the word Bivsara teaches you that by Nida, even though it's still internal to her, she is Tmeya. Zova taught us that a Zava, also, even though it remains internal, she is still Tmeya. And then the word Yeh taught us that even though it remains internal, Poletet Shechvat Zera is Tmeya. Rabbi Shimon disagreed with regards to Shechvat Zera and said, Dayake Boala. Why shouldn't she be any different than the individuals depositing the semen into her? The male only becomes tamei when the shechvat zera exits his body. So too for her. Her tumah should be no greater than that. And therefore, her tumah should only be rendered when it leaves her body. So if I was to take the three nafkaminot that you just noted over here, then I would have an answer to my question. The Chachamim believe that it is a Ri'iyah, and that's why they say it's Mitameh Bifnim Kiba Bachutz. And Rabbi Shimon believes that it's a Nigiyah, and that's why he believes that it only is Mitameh Mibachutz, once it exits the woman. So I would have had the answer to my question. That's what the Gemara says here. If he heard of the Braita, then it's easy to understand. The Rabbanan Ro'ah Havya, according to Rabbanan, she's considered to be a woman with a sighting, and the Shechvat Zera is a sighting. The Rabbi Shimon, no God Havya. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's simply contact, and that's why it has to exit the woman and not be internal. Velo Shmi Allah Matanita, if he never heard of the Braita, then Mistavra no God Havya. Then it makes sense to say that she is Tmeya because of Nogat and not because of Ri'iya. It makes sense to be Nogat because this is not something that emanates from her. When you speak about a Ri'iya, we're generally speaking about some sort of liquid that is produced by the individual themselves, and then they're discharging that fluid. Over here, the fluid was deposited into her from the outside, and now she's discharging a liquid that was deposited inside of her. It's not her own liquids that she's discharging, and therefore logically would assume that she is no God. So that's the Gemara's presentation or question as to why did Rav Shmuel Bar Bizna even have a question over here. The Gemara says, the Olam Shmiele Matnita. He heard of the Braita. Valiba de Rabbanon Lokimi Baile. According to Rabbanon, he has no question that the Rabbanon believe Ro'ahavya, that she is a person who is having a sighting when she has Poletet Shechvat Zera, and all the dinim of Ro'ah apply to her. Ki kami bayile, the question is alibid de Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Shimon, dilatamei bifnim kibachutz lo kami bayile. Question as to whether she becomes tmeya internally, that's not a question, because Rabbi Shimon's explicit about his opinion, that she only becomes tmeya when it exits her body. She's not tmeya when it still remains internal. So as far as that's concerned, we know it has the din of nigiyah. Ki kami bayile, restore the other two factors, does Rabbi Shimon believe the other two factors are governed by Ri'iyah or Nigiyah? Yes, with regards to sighting and the placement of where the sighting is, he clearly believes it's like a Nigiyah and it has to exit the woman's body. But with regards to the other two factors, maybe she's considered to be a Ro'ah. My, kika my Rabbi Shimon, daya ki bo'ala, it's the reason that he says that she's not Tmeya until it exits her body. It's not because fundamentally he doesn't believe it's a Ri'iyah, but he says that we have this Hekesh to the Bo'ala. And just like the one who's Bo'eler, it's only Tmeya once the Shechvat Zera exits his body, so too for her, she should not be Tmeya before it exits her body. Aval, the store. Or the Tmeya Bekoshu, Ro'ah Havya. But with regards to the other two matters of stira of the Shivinikim, as well as to make her Tameh without any shiur, maybe she's considered to be a Ro'ah. So in general, Rabbi Shimon agrees to the Chachamim that she's considered to be a Ro'ah. A woman is having a sighting. It's just with regards to the placement of where she becomes Tameh, there Rabbi Shimon has the Hekesh to Dayak Ibo'ala. And that's the exception to the rule. That's not the rule itself. That's one side you could have in Rabbi Shimon. Odilma Loshna, or maybe it makes no difference. And he fundamentally disagrees with the Chachamim and believes that she is a Nogat and not a Ro'ah. And therefore all the Dinim follow that Shita of Rabbi Shimon, that she is a Nogat, which means no Stira. You need a minimum Shior, and you will have to wait until it exits the body before you are Tmeya. In terms of the question itself, Tosafot points out that in the Gemara in Psachim, it seems that Rabbi Shimon believes that Shechvat Zera does have a minimum shiur, or a requirement of a shiur. It would then be obvious that Rabbi Shimon thinks that she's a Nogat. Because now we have two out of the three items where Rabbi Shimon opines. One is where the Tumah happens, and that's Bachutz, and not Bifnim. And number two is he requires a shiur, it doesn't say Koshu. Both of those indicate that it's a Nogat. Then why does the Gemara have a question? So Tosafot suggests that the question is the following. And we've noted this earlier, Tosafot mentioned this earlier with regards to attribution to a Mishnah or an opinion in a Mishnah. That doesn't mean that it's that Tana that is authoring that Mishnah, but rather the Tana of the Mishnah is relying on that individual's opinion. And Tosafot says something similar here. We're maybe not asking in Rabbi Shimon himself. We're asking about other Tanaim that subscribe to Rabbi Shimon's position that Dayak Bo'ala, what do they think about the other two items? For Rabbi Shimon, maybe even we know the answer to that question because he believes that you need a minimum shiur. But for other Tanaim that subscribe to Rabbi Shimon's view of Dayak Yibo'alah, what do they think about the other two items? Are the other two items Ro'ah? And again, it's not a fundamental machlok between him and the Chachamim. Just a question about where it becomes Tameh, Bifnim or Bimbachut. Or is it a much more fundamental machloket? And he believes that she is a no-god. And the Chachamim believe that she is a Ro'ah. So the Gemara says, Igadame lo'olam lo shmi'ale matnita. So some say that he never heard of the Braita. The first answer was given was the question was posed because he knew about the Braita. He was not asking in the Chachamim's position. He's asking in Rabbi Shimon's position as to what is Rabbi Shimon's opinion. How differentiated is he from the Rabbanim? Igad Amri over here says, Olam lo shmi'ale matnita. He had no idea about the Braita. And this is his question. Since the Torah was makpid on Tumat Balkeri in Sinai, Ro'ah havya. It must be that she is a Ro'ah. Odilma lo gamrina misinai dichidushu. Or maybe we don't use Har Sinai as a paradigm because it's an unusual situation. Da zavin mitzoraim dechamire, other types or forms of Tumah that are much more chamur, lo achmir behu rachmana. The Torah never precludes them for Mamad Har Sinai. Tosafot points out the issue of Zavin and Mitzorayin is not really relevant by Har Sinai because the Torah was yet to be given. So Tumat Mitzorah and Tumat Zav is not existent. But nevertheless, the Gemara feels that since it is something that is either exuded, expunged by the body, it's a tumah that derives from some liquid that you are discharging or fluids that you're discharging. And by mitzora, it's something obvious that even cultures outside of Yadut in both these instances saw these as being negative. So there should have been some sensitivity to this type of tumah. So even though the Torah was not given yet, nevertheless, that type of tumah should have precluded your ability to interact with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And so, if the Torah didn't preclude that, it's clearly speaking to Shechvat Zera in an unusual form, and that's a Chiddush. If it's a Chiddush, you can't learn anything from a Chiddush and extrapolate that to the Halacha beyond that which is the Chiddush, which is Har Sinai. Or, do we say that Har Sinai is a paradigm of sorts? That paradigm is that Shechvat Zera causes a problem for 3 days. If she is poleta the Shechvat Zera for 3 days, any one of those days, she is Tmeah, and it's problematic. And the reason that the Torah was makbid on Shechvat Zera is because she's classified as a Ro'ah. She's classified as someone who's having a sighting. It was simply Tumat Negiah, the Torah wouldn't have been so makbid on such a problem. The real problem is if you're Ro'ah, which is a much higher level of Tumah, as we already noted, when you expunge something from your body, when there's a flow of fluids from the body, that type of tumah is considered to be a much more intimate, problematic type of tumah, and our highest forms of tumah come from that, which are zav, nida, zavah gedolah. All of them come from this problem of a discharge of liquids, and they have very high levels of tumah. So maybe that's the issue with regards to Har Sinai. Depending on which way you think, will then have influence on whether you think you can extrapolate from Har Sinai and whether it's considered to be Ro'ah, like it is at Har Sinai. Or maybe Har Sinai is not a paradigm, and therefore, yeah, it was Ro'ah at Har Sinai. But now, it's not an issue because Har Sinai was an unusual event, and it has its own rules and its own laws, and it doesn't apply to us today. Dosevo points out that the problem of Baal Keri or Shechvat Zera at Har Sinai must be an issue for the woman and not the man. Because as far as the man is concerned, he's only Tameh Tumat Erev. He only has Tumat for 1 day, whenever it was expelled. You wouldn't need 3 days in order to protect the individual for being Tameh Tumat Shechvat Zera approaching Har Sinai. So the window of 3 days must be for the woman because she's Poletet Shechvat Zera, and that Shechvat Zera has a lifespan of 72 hours. And so therefore that's why the 3 days must be relevant to the woman, and we would learn from that, or try to learn from that, to what the din of Poletet Shechvat Zera is today. Now, obviously, according to the first answer, that the Gemara was determining whether, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's Nogat or it's Ro'ah, Rabbi Shimon, if he believes it's no God, believes then that Har Sinai is a chidush, because then he doesn't learn from Har Sinai. On the other hand, here, where we don't know anybody's opinion, or he's not aware of the opinions from the Braita, here he's asking a more generic question. Is Har Sinai a paradigm, by which we would then say Ro'ah is the standard for Bulet and Shechvat Zera, or is Har Sinai simply a unique aspect in history? Some of the Achronim, like the Aruch L'Ner over here, ask, wait a minute, wasn't everybody cured from their tuma'ot and from their problems at Har Sinai? And so then how were there any Zavin and Mitzorayim anyway? Then what's the Gemara's question? Even the Zavin and Mitzorayim were allowed to be at Har Sinai. There was nobody to be a Zav or a Mitzora to be at Har Sinai. So either you could say that had there been a Zav and Mitzora, the Torah does not preclude them. Or you could suggest that even though it cured them from their Ziva or their Tzarat, nevertheless, they never became Tehorim from that. The Torah never gave them the process to become Tehorim. It just cured them of the disease or the problem that they had, and therefore they would still be Tmeim, and that would be a question as to why they were okay, and Shechvat Zera is not okay, implying that Shechvat Zera is unique, and maybe uniquely associated with Har Sinai, and something we can't extrapolate from. So Malay, Abaye responds to him, Ro'ah Havya. The woman is considered to be a Ro'ah, as if she is having a sighting, and therefore all of the nafkaminut that we spoke before will be in force. Ata Shaile, here it says Rava, the Bach changes the Girsa to Rabba, which would make sense, because a Rabba is one of Abaye's Rebbeim, and so he went, Rav Shmuel Bavishna, and asked Rabba the same question, Amalei Ro'ah Havya. He again said that she's considered to be a woman who's having a sighting. Ata the Kameter of Yosef, he went to Rav Yosef, who is another Rebbe of Abaye, it's his Rabba Muvhak, Amalei Ro'ah Havya. He also said the same thing, that she's considered to be a Ro'ah. After he did the tour, he asked Abaye the question, went to his two Rebbeim, and comes back to Abaye, and says, Amalei, Kuchu Baroka Chada Tafitu. All of you are made of one spit or of the same saliva, meaning that you're all of the same opinion, or you all have the same shmua, which is not unusual, because Abaye learned by Rabba and by Rav Yosef, and the fact that he has an opinion that matches theirs would not be unusual, and therefore that's where Shmuel ben Misna is saying, is you guys are all alike, you all spit with the same spit, or you all come from the same spit. Amalei, Shapir Amir Lecha, I spoke properly to you, I gave you the right answer. Adkan lo kamar Rabbi Shimon dayake bo'ala. Rabbi Shimon over there only said dayak go'ala, ela tamei bifnim kibachot. To tell you that the question of to when she becomes tamei'ah is only outside, external, and not internal. About the store that tamei bekoshu, ro'ah havya. But he agrees fundamentally to the Chachamim's position that she is considered to be a Ro'ah, and therefore she is a Ro'ah, both according to the Chachamim and according to Rabbi Shimon, with the only machlok between them as to whether there is an overriding principle with regards to the citing of the issue. According to the Chachamim, it's no different than Nida and Zava, whereas Rabbi Shimon, it has this hekesh to the Bo'ala, which limits it over here to say that she's only Tmeah once it exits her body. But everybody agrees that she is a Ro'ah. Now, the halacha, that's the way we paskin, that a woman who is a poletet shechvat zera is classified as a Ro'ah. And then you have to understand what the nafkaminot are, as well as to what does it mean to be a Ro'ah by poletet shechvat zera. So the Rishonim actually argue about that. The view of the Balei HaTosafot, which we actually saw back that on Daf Lamed Gimel, is that any sighting of shechvat zera in the poletet shechvat zera is impactful on the woman. It doesn't matter how much, doesn't matter what is mixed with, as long as it's still considered shechvat zera, it has impact on the woman, and she is both tmeah and it's oker. It undermines her shivanikiim or ability to count shivanikiim because this is something that is considered to be a discharge. That's the view of the Tosafot and the Re, back on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, the last Tosafot there, and we'll come back to that Tosafot again, Gavai LaHalacha. The Ramban fundamentally agrees with the Re that you do have to worry about this Poletet Shechvat Zera, and it would be Soter Shemnikiim, but he says practically it's not an issue, because a woman will only have that if she doesn't walk around. If she gets up and walks around, the Poletet Shechvat Zera happens much earlier, and therefore it shouldn't be a problem for a duration. Most of it should be discharged pretty quickly, and then within a day or so, all of it should be out, and the woman should not have to worry about plitat shechvazera after that point within the shimnikim, LMK, she has a sighting or she sees this shechvazera coming out. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, the woman is only a problem, poletet shechvazera, that is impactful in terms of being oker shimnikim, if the shechvazera is mixed with something else. Just like earlier in the Gemara, it said that the shechvazera has six tuchei ziva in them, by the man, when he is a zav, that the shechvazera could undermine a shimnikim. There the Gemara said it's only when the shechvazera has little drops of ziva that's mixed in with it. And similarly over here, he believes that the shechvazera is only impactful in undermining the woman's shimnikim if it has six tuchei dam. If there is dam or blood that's mixed with it, that's what causes the undermining of the shimnikim. Absent that, it will not undermine her shimnikim. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. You have the view of the Ravid that this whole din of poletet shechvazera and being oker or ruining the shimnikim is uniquely associated with tuma and tara, with regards to tarot. It has nothing to do with the din of nida and being muteret lebaala. So it'll actually turn out that you'll have two sets of shimnikim. If she's poletet shechvazera, as far as her husband is concerned, it's still considered to be shimnikim. She'll go to the mikveh and she'll be muteret to her husband. As far as tarot are concerned, that'll undermine her shimnikim, and she'll have to count a second shimnikim for tuma and tara. But the Ravid sees this as uniquely a din in tuma and tara, and tarot, not a din in being asura lebala. The Rabbeinu Yona, who's quoted in the Rashbo, says that the din of soteret over here is that a poletet shikvatzera is considered to be a day that is enunaki. So she's poletet shikvatzera during her shivnikim, it's problematic, because then it's a day that's not naki. But if she's poletet shikvatzera after she's counted her shivnikim, before she goes to the mikveh, it would not be a problem. And that is because it's not considered to be tum'ah, to make her tmeah, or to undermine her tara. It simply makes her to be enunaki, that she's unable to count that as one of her shivnikim, and it's an interruption in her shivnikim. So it sits in between. It's not mitamei her to the point where it's oker, but it is also not enough to be considered a day of tahara, and therefore it would be possibly an interruption of her shivnikim. So the halacha, we are choshesh to the shita tari, which means that any pelita shechvazera is problematic. It's problematic for tarot, it's problematic for baala. It also undermines the shivnikim, even though it has no other discharge with it. And we worry about any type of discharge whatsoever, plitat shechvazera, it's both undermines and makes her tmeah. So that has nafkamino today, whereby our women today do not have the din of nida for 7 days, and then only afterwards have shivnikim. Our women all consider themselves to be zavot gidolot, and they always count shivnikim. So the question is, when can you start counting the shivnikim? If you have a din of tumat nida for 7 days, then only afterwards you begin your meziva, and you don't count shivnikim, then poletet shechvazera is almost a moot point, because poletet shechvazera, if she even had biyah with her husband right before she had a sighting of nida, she has 7 days of nida where she's tmeah, whereby any plita at that point in time will be finished by the time she gets to the end of those days. Today, where we count shivnikim, then that has a nafkamina as to when she can start her shivnikim. If we fear there's a plitat shechvazera which undermines her shivnikim, she can't start until she's cleared the time frame in which she could possibly be poletet shechvazera. And that's what the Balia Tosafot spoke about back on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. Tosafot Ro'ah over there suggests that if a woman has bi'ah right before she has a sighting of dam that makes it into her nida, for our women today, she would have to wait 72 hours before she can count her shivnikim, but the 72 hours are me'eit le'eit, and in order to avoid any problems, the Balia Tosafot point out, she needs to wait 4 days, because it's the day that she started in, the next day, and then the third day, but the third day is in the middle of the day, because it's 72 hours, and therefore we make her complete that day, so it's 4 days, which it's really 72 hours, but it's stretched across a period of 4 days, and so because of that, we make her wait 4 days in terms of plitat shechvazera. That's the view of the Balia Tosafot. The Balia Tosafot over there only suggests that that's true when the woman had biyah with her husband right before she has a sighting. the Rishonim, the Maharil, the Marit, Shuma Tadeshk, and others start to speak about a low plug, which is that we don't differentiate between women that do have biyah right before they have their sighting versus women who do not have biyah. We're just choshesh for any woman that she might have to plead that shechvat zera, and we standardize the halacha that all women have to wait that 72 hours, and because it's 72 hours, we make her wait 4 days in order to make sure that it is really 72 hours and not 3 days where she could shortchange herself of the 72 hours. So we make her wait a full 4 days. But that is not enough because then the Maril notes that we're choshesh for a riyah ben hashmashot. If she had a riyah during ben hashmashot and she considers that to be a riyah from the day before, and it really was the next day, her plitat shechvat zera, then she'll miscount her 72 hours based on that, or she'll miscount which day she can have a hefsek tara for, because she'll push it up a day thinking it was from the previous day, because it happened ben hashmashot, when it really ben hashmashot is the next day. So for that reason, they added on an additional day to make it that a woman has to wait 5 days before she can start counting her shivanikim. The first 3 days are because of Har Sinai, which by the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Pei Vav says there that the Torah requires separation from the woman for 3 days before Mamad Har Sinai because of Plitat Shechvat Zera. There the Gemara brings a Mishnah as to whether that Plitat Shechvat Zera, how many onot does it require? In the end, the Gemara concludes like the Shita the Chachamim that it's 6 onot or 72 hours. And that is the period of time in which a woman is considered to be tmeyav. She's paletet shechvat zera. I would undermine her shivanikiyim. So that's how we get the 72 hours or the 3 days. Tosafot over here notes we add in an extra day because 72 hours could span over 4 days, even though it's really only 3 periods of 24 hours. And then the Marik adds in that because of this kashash of ben hashmashot, where she might mistakenly think it belongs to the previous day instead of the next day, because of that chashash, we added an extra day in to be sure that even if it was the latter day in the ben hashmashot and not the previous day, she still would be more than 72 hours later or more than 4 days later. So really it is truthfully a chumrah built on top of a chumrah over here. One is that we make her wait 4 days for the 72 hours, and then ben hashmashot we add in another day. So that is the minhag of Bnei Ashkenaz to wait 5 days at minimum before a woman can start counting her shivanikiyim. In most cases, it's not an issue because any woman is menstruating usually sees dam for a minimum of 5 days, and therefore she's usually unable to have a hefsek tara and to start counting before that period of time anyway. But nevertheless, it does have a nafkamina for women with very short cycles. Women that have shorter cycles sometimes then would have to wait for those 5 days in order to be able to count their shivanikiyim. That might actually present problems in terms of them becoming pregnant because they miss ovulation. A woman with a shorter cycle who can't start counting her shivanikiyim, there's a minimum of 12 days before she can be together with her husband. If she has a shorter cycle, she might be ovulating on day 12 and missing ovulation every time. Because of that, there are sometimes women who are trapped and can't become pregnant because they are considered to be nidot, midrabanan, or halachic nidot. And the way that the poskim deal with that is to say that if a woman does not go to the mikveh on a given cycle, then the next cycle, she does not have to wait the minimum of 5 days. The truth is, if she never was together with her husband, it would have the same din. But we don't allow for that because we have a low plug that if she's allowed to be with her husband, we're choshesh for it. But in a case where she never went to the mikveh on her previous cycle, then she couldn't have been together with her husband. She couldn't have been together with her husband. When she starts a new cycle, she does not have to wait the minimum of 5 days because of the fact that there's no possibility of plitat shechvat zera then. So a woman with a short cycle then could possibly cut it down by a day or two and then make sure that she hits ovulation. So that's the halachic solution to that problem. Women with longer cycles usually don't have a problem with the 5 days. They might have a problem that they can't start their shivanikiyim and they then are tmeot when it comes to ovulation, not because of the 5 days, but because they can't start the shivanikiyim until 7, 8, 9 days after they begin menstruating. So that's a separate issue about how to deal with that problem. But here, we're just dealing with the paletet shechvat zera, which comes from the Gemara in Shabbat Pei Vav, the Gemara back on Lamed Gimel and the Tosafot over here, and our Gemara over here, which says that the woman is considered to be a Ro'ah, a woman who is sighting and can undermine her Shivanikiyim. That is enough Gemara today, where all women count Shivanikiyim, that we have to wait for her to begin her count of Shivanikiyim to consider the issue of Paletet Shechvat Zera. And I will send out later the Mikorot, find them on the website, the Mikorot on these issues of Paletet Shechvat Zera. Alright, now the Gemara begins. Tan Rabbanan. Hanida Vazava Vashomeret Yom Keneged Yom Vayoledet Kulam Mitamot Bifnim Kibachutz. All of these women have a din of tuma when the blood or the liquids exit their uterus, they become tmeim, even though it hasn't left the body of the woman. Now, as far as nida, zava, and shomeret yom keneged yom, we've already addressed that. Nida and zava, and a shomeret yom keneged yom is a zava ktana. We already addressed from the braita in yesterday's daf that we learned that out of bivsara and zova. The question really from the braita is the yoledet. And that's what Gemara says, bishlama kulo v'chaye. I understand where they come from. I understand the din. Ela yoledet. What is this yoledet over here? Ibi me nida. If it's during the period of time that had she had a sighting of dam, she would have been considered a nida, then whatever comes out, she should be treated like a nida. Ibi me ziva. If it's during the days, her 11 days of yimei ziva, then also there, she should be treated like a zava. And whenever it exits her uterus, that's when she should become tmeya. So then, why is yoledet a separate issue when either she's a nida or a zava? And even if the dam is protected by the leida, the dam that's coming out is under the rubric of nida and ziva, and should be no different. So Marzeh says, lo, tzricha, we need it for this case. She adalit bo mituma letara. She's going in the mikveh to go from her days of tuma to her days of tara. That means for a male, from day 7 going to day 8, and for a female going from day 14 into day 15. She's finished her 7 days, she's finished her 14 days, she's going to the mikveh in order to become tehora from those days of tuma that night, and then begin her days of dam toar afterwards. So she goes down to the mikveh, v'ha chiha dam rav zera mechir ba'ashi amarav. And like this memra that we have in the mesora from Rav, yoledet, she ardalit bo, mi tumalet ara, a woman who had already given birth, that goes down to the mikvah, in that transition phase between the days of tumat and the days of tara, v'ne'ekar mi menadam. And then she has a discharge of blood from her. Biyirida mitama, if she's descending to the mikvah, going into the mikvah, that makes her tmeya. Be'aliyah, if it's after she's already gone to the mikvah, then she is tohora. So I'm really Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Rabbi Zeira. Why on the way down is she tmeya? Tuma bluahi. The dam that's found inside of her is not exposed. It's something that is internal to the woman. We're going to see that in the second half of today's daf. It's a machloket between Abai and Rava as to whether the dam is considered to be bluah or beta starim. Over here, the Gemara seems to be following the shita of Abaye. Tosafo tries to reconcile and figure out how the Gemara could also follow the Shita of Rava. The other way to answer on behalf of Rava as to why here it's Tuma Blua and later on he doesn't say it's Tuma Blua is because there might be a difference between where in the vaginal canal it is. It might be that at the exit or the lower part of the vaginal canal, that's where Rava argues with Abaye as to whether it's called Beta Starim or Blua. But deeper into the vaginal canal, there even Rava agrees that it's Tuma Blua. If that's true, then over here the Gemara is not only asking according to Abaye, but even asking according to Rava. Other Rishonim simply say that the Gemara sometimes to ask a question will take up a position that's not the halacha. So even though this is Abaye's position, the Gemara at this point wants to challenge a statement over here based on that position of Abaye and says, if it's Tuma Blua, why should it have any impact? Dam that's internal to the woman is not problematic in terms of conveying tuma. Amalei, zil shaylei le Rabbi Avin. Go ask Rabbi Avin for the answer. Da asabarit nihalei, because I already explained to him the answer. Bikarkishli bereshe, beve midrusha. When he's the beve midrash, when I told him the answer, he nodded his head to acknowledge that he thinks that what I'm saying is correct. So you go ask him as to what the answer is to this problem. Alright, so now, in terms of the dam of Leida for your days of Tuma and your days of Tohar, That's determined by when you discharge the dam. When you discharge the dam is classified by when it was discharged. So here, the dam was discharged while she was still in your Yemei Tumah. So that means that the dam is dam tameh. Now, as far as the woman is concerned, when she goes to the mikveh now, she becomes tehora because she's no longer discharging dam, that is tameh, and now she's going into Yemei Tohar. Any discharge that she has after this point will be dam tohar. So as far as discharge is concerned, the days and going to the mikveh are determinant. And so therefore, if she had a sighting before, that made her tmeah. But then if she goes to the mikveh at the proper time, she's now tohara. And any sighting she has afterwards will be dam tohar. The problem is that this dam was already exuded prior to her going to the mikveh, which means it's classified as dam tmeah. But then now it's sitting internal to the woman. So as far as the ri'yah is concerned, the ri'yah is long done. And that has no impact on making her tamei over here. The only question is the dam that's found inside of her, which is tamei dam, because it came during a riyah that was in a time period when she was classified as tamei. So therefore, it is tamei, but it's internal to the woman. If it's internal to the woman, it can't have an impact on the woman, and that's the nature of the question. It's tumah blua, it's inside the woman, it cannot convey tumah to the woman through nigiyah, through matzah, if it's internal to the woman. So how is it here that when she is going down to the mikveh and she has a discharge of this dam that has any impact on her? Because the nakar, the sighting of the dam on her way down to the mikveh has no impact on her becoming Torah. Because as soon as she goes to the mikveh, that takes care of the ri'yah aspect of it. The only question is the dam itself. And the dam itself is considered to be tmeah. And why does that the case if she already went to the mikveh and the dam is still internal to her? That's his question. As far as on her way out, if she's nekar, if the dam is sighted or leaves her uterus on the way up, it doesn't matter anymore because now she's in your meitara, and a dam that's sighted then is dam toar. So that's the basic threshold, is when did the dam leave her uterus? That determines whether it came when she was in her tmeah or when she was tohara. The mikveh is the cutoff. So if the dam exited before she went down to the mikveh, she's tmeah and the dam is tmeh. It's after she comes out of the mikveh, she's tohara and the dam is tahor. But the mikveh still solves the problem of her being tmeah and tohara, because if she had the sighting before she went to the mikveh, that's fine. Because now she went to the mikveh and she's tohara. The only question is the dam that was out of her uterus before she went to the mikveh, that dam itself is tameh. And that's what's being noted over here, that that dam is tameh. And the question is, why should it have any impact on the woman if it's still internal to the woman? Dam internal to the woman has no impact on her status. So he says, I explained this to Rabbi Avin. Go ask him what I said. Azel Shaila, he went and asked Rabbi Avin what Rabbi Zeira said. Amalei, Asua kinevelat of tohor. They made it just like kinevelat of tohor. Shemitama bigadim bebeit abliya. That it makes someone tmeameh, even though it's tuma blua, and it affects the bigadim of the individual. This is a special din with a nevelat of tohor. An of tohor that becomes a nevela has no din of tuma. If you touch it, you carry it, any normal interactions that would make a person tameh when they come to contact with a nevela are not relevant by nevelat of tohor. The only way you become tameh by nevelat of tohor is when you swallow it. When it goes into your throat, when it reaches beit abliya. When you swallow it, it makes the individual who swallows it tameh. Not only are they tameh, but their clothing is tameh. So what you see there is that even though it's tumah blua, because it's in beit abliya, the same word, blia blua, it's down deep into the throat, that makes you tameh. Despite the fact that it's tumah blua, it still makes you tameh. So over here too, the Chachamim made it that even though it's tumah blua, it still affects you. Mar says, mi dami. How can you compare the cases? Hatam ein la tuma b'chutz, hacha ki nafik debray litamei. Wait a minute. How can you even compare the cases? By tumat nevelat of tahor, there's only one form of tuma. That's when you swallow it. That's what makes you tamei. If you touch it or carry it, it has no impact on you whatsoever. That's why tuma blua is impactful, is because that's what the Torah says, is where you become tamei. Over here, by the dam of the leida, the woman would become tmeah. Nobody disagrees that after the blood exits the woman herself, she'll be tameh tumat maga. The problem we have is that while the blood remains internal to her, why is it impacting on the woman? Why is she tmeya? So that's very different than the case of Nevela Tof Tahor. By Nevela Tof Tahor, you're only tmeh in Tuma Blua, nothing else. Over here, the Gemara is asking just the opposite. By Blua, she should be Tora, and then when it exits, everybody agrees that she's tmeh Tumat Maga, because the dam is tmeh. When it leaves her body, it touches her, and therefore she is tmeya. The only question is, when it's internal, why does it impact on her? To say it's like Nevela Tof Tahor is just not true. Because there's only the form of Tuma Blua. Here you're saying the Chachamim instituted Tuma Blua, and then when it exits, it also makes her Tmeya. So why are you pairing it to a Nevelat Of Tahor? That's the Gemara's fundamental question. There is a different question, which is, why would you institute a problem of Tuma Blua over here with regards to the woman? Why did the Chachamim go there, Tuma Blua? This is what it says over here, Hacha Gazru Rabbanan Tfei, Kidei Shel Yavol Lit'ot. So the woman won't think that it's tahor because she went to the mikveh, even when it exits her. In order to prevent that from happening, we declare her tmeya, and the mikveh doesn't help it over here because she still has this dam inside of her. So it says, hachanami, kishyetzei lachutz. In hachanami, only when it exits her will she be tmeya. It says, iyatza lachutz, if it exited her, myla membra. What's the chiddush over here that she's tmeya when the dam exits her? That's not a chiddush, because the whole point of our bringing this down was to explain why by yoledet can you have something that's internal that still makes you tmeya, not when it exits the body. If you're telling me that it already exited her body, that's no chiddush that she is tmeya. We're trying to find it when it's internal that she's still tmeya, even though it hasn't exited the body. So Mar says, I would have thought, migo d'mahani tvila d'dam d'ika gavai tani nami lahai. I would have thought, just like the tzvila helps the dam that is in the uterus, so that any dam that's exuded, discharged after this point in time, will be dam toar, tani nami lahai. It would also help that dam that is bachutz, that is in the vaginal canal, it would also make it tahor, kamash balan, that it does not make it tahor. But that means that this case here, of when you are tmeya, is only when it exits the body, not while it is Tuma Blua. And the reason that we have to tell you about that is so that the woman doesn't mistakenly come to the conclusion that since she went to the mikveh, and therefore any sightings she has heretofore are Torim, or Dam Toar, she would also think that the Dam that is now being discharged from her, that was already out of the uterus when she went to the mikveh, that also should be Tahor. Along comes Rabbi Zeira, in the name of Rabbi Chir Bashi, in the name of Rav, and says that that's not the case, and the dam makes you tamei when it exits your body. The Gemara says, all right, Shmaitin Ifrik. You explain the position of Rabbi Zeira. You reconcile that with the issue of Tuma Blua. The problem is, Eli Yoledet. The Yoledet still remains a problem. Now I don't have a case of Yoledet by which I can explain where she is tmeya, bifnim kibachutz, where the dam is still internal to her, and she is tmeya. And it's not when it exits her body. Elo yoledet, ibime nida nida, ibime ziba ziba. We're back to that original question. Where it says, hachem mayaskinan, beleida yiveshta. It was a birth that had no discharge of dam. It was a dry birth. A dry birth means she has a birth, but has no discharge of dam with it. Leida yiveshta, mamitamei bifnim kibachutz tika. It's a dry birth. Then what are you making tamei internally? And you don't have to wait for it to leave her body. There's nothing leaving her body at all. So then why is she tmeya at all? Kagon, shetzi vlad rosho chutz leprusdor. The case where the vlad extended his head outside of the prusdor, which seems to be the birth canal. Ukli raboshaya, like the din of raboshaya, dam raboshaya, gzeira, shema yotzi vlad rosho chutz leprusdor. We had this in Chulin, that a midwife who's dealing with the baby, if she puts her hand in and touches the baby, she becomes tamei, tumatamei, if it is a stillbirth. Even though it's only classified as a birth once the fetus leaves the woman and is born. What Rabbi Shaya says is, if the head comes out of the prusdor, that already is deemed a birth. So as far as the midwife is concerned, if she touches the baby at that point, she's tamei, tumatamei, if it is a stillborn. So what we're worried about is she's not going to be so discerning as to when the head leaves the birth canal. Therefore, we make her a tmeah even when she touches the baby further in, or at any point she touches the stillborn, she is tamei tumatamet. The chashash is the problem of maybe the head exited the woman. So what you have here is, in essence, tumat leida or tumatamet, the leida will be deemed to be a leida even before it exits the woman. Even though it's not a leida until the head leaves the pruzdor, we're choshesh that that happened without the midwife noticing, and therefore we deem the baby to be born even before it leaves the birth canal. And the Gemara Chulin notes that this only applies to the midwife, not to the woman herself, because the woman herself can feel when the fetus has exited from the pruzdor into the bayit achitzon, and therefore she only becomes tameah, tumatameh, at that threshold. Whereas for the midwife, we have her become tameah as soon as she can touch the stillborn, because it might have exited to the bayit achitzon without her being aware of that. And Tosafot points out that this din of Rav Hoshaya must be a gzeirat hakatuv, which is that only once the head has exited is it deemed a birth, and therefore the fetus, or the stillborn here, converts from being tuma blu'a into tuma that is exposed and now can be mitameh. Because otherwise, why would it matter which part of the stillborn exits the woman? As long as a part of the stillborn exits the woman, then you can become tameh tumatameh. Here you have a mate, and a portion of the mate is begaloi. If you come into contact with it, you should be tameh. So even if it stuck its hand out and you touched it, it should make you tameh. So why is it that Rav Hoshaya requires that it be that the head exits? So it must be that the tum'ah that is associated with the stillborn is a gzeret hakatuv that's only considered to be out of the woman, or not blu'ah anymore, once it is born, or deemed born. That only happens when the head exits from the birth canal. And therefore, both according to Rav Hoshaya and the Braita, we have something where yoledet, where a birth is deemed to have happened, even though it has not exited the bayit achitzon. And that's true here for tumat amet in Rav Hoshaya's case, and it's true for tumat leida in the case of the braita of leida yeveshta. So even though the head is only in the bayit achitzon and hasn't exited completely from the woman, it still renders it a leida. And that's what it means. It's mitamei mifnim ki bachutz. It's mitamei internally, like it is mitamei bachutz. Tosafot over here questions what exactly is the pruzdor. He says, earlier in the Masechta, we said that dam that is found in the pruzdor is safek tamei, safek tahor. So that makes it sound like the pruzdor is already considered to be outside, not inside. And yet for Leida, we're saying that it has to exit the pruzdor in order for it to be outside. So Tosafot says, either you have to say that the dam is safek when it exits the pruzdor, or the more likely answer is, and that's what Tosafot says over here, yesh lechalek ben Leida le dam nida. Dam nida is one din, and Leida is a different din. For dam nida, it has to exit the uterus. If it's in the pruzdor, it is already tamei. For birth, it needs to leave the birth canal in order for it to be a birth. That means it has to exit the pruzdor. Tosafot then brings a third version of pruzdor, and this, we've already noted that distinction when we learned this in Chulin and in Bechorot, which is that a woman has a pruzdor, which an animal does not have, and there Rashi notes the pruzdor, or the fear that we have, is that the thighs of the woman will cover up the birth. There, the Gemara is referring to the pruzdor as not being the actual birth canal, but the woman's anatomy, which has the fact that her thighs cover up that area, it might shield you from being able to see the actual birth coming out of the pruzdor. And therefore, there's an extended pruzdor, which is not only the birth canal itself, but even the thighs of the woman. So in that case, Tosafot then has three different dinim of pruzdor. There's pruzdor, which is a deemed pruzdor, which is when the woman's thighs cover up that area. There's a actual pruzdor, which is the birth canal, which has a nafkamina when the baby leaves it. And then there's a pruzdor for dam nida, which even while they're in the pruzdor, they are tameh, because as long as they've exited from the uterus to there and they didn't come from some other location, as the Gemara discussed earlier in the Masechta. V'chi ha'u da'atu l'kameh d'rova. And this is similar to a case that came before Rova, which is Amar Leh, an individual came to Rova and said, Mahu the memhel b'shabta. Can you give a brit milah on Shabbat? Amalei, shaper dami. Of course you can. Brit Milah is docha et Shabbat, and of course you can have a Brit Milah on Shabbat. But at the Norfolk, after the questioner left, Amarava Salkadatka Dav Gavra Lo Yoda the Shari the Memel Bishabto, is it possible that this person didn't know that you're allowed to give a Brit Milah on Shabbat? That's a very common halacha, it's a common occurrence, and everybody knows that. He wouldn't come and ask me that type of question. It must be there's something more to the case. Azal Batrei, he followed him out, chased him down. Amalei, Emela, Izi, Gufadov, Dehechabo. Says to me, young man, Izi is like an expression of adoration. Young man, why don't you tell me exactly what the case was? Amalei, Shema'it, Vlad, the Tzavitz, Apanya, Demale, Shabto. Late on Erev Shabbat, I heard the voice of the fetus. But it was not born until Shabbat. So the husband, father, doctor, whoever he was that was present, said that he heard the sound of the fetus. Rashi adds in, Shemati ata valad soek betocha me'ayim mi'beod yom. I heard the voice of the baby internally to the woman, meaning that while it was in her intestines, coming from inside of her, I heard the voice of the baby late on Erev Shabbat. But then the baby wasn't born until Shabbat. Amalei, so Rava says back to him, Hi, Hotzi Rosho, Chutz L'Prizdoru. The reason you heard the noise was because the baby's head exited the birth canal. So over here, it might be that the husband or whoever this individual is didn't see that because of what we said before, the thighs of the woman were covering the area. So he didn't notice. He thought it was still internal to the woman and he's hearing the cry of the baby, even though from him it seems like the baby's still inside. But that's because the thighs of the woman are covering that area and you can't see the baby. And then he thinks the baby's only born later on Shabbat itself. What Rava is noting is, if you heard the sound of the baby, that means the head of the baby exited the birth canal. In that case, it means the official birth date was Friday and not Shabbat. If that's the case, sari milah shelo bizmana, then if you're going to go to Shabbat, it's a milah that's not on its proper date. It's not on the eighth day. If it's a milah that's postponed, it's not on the eighth day, you do not do that on Shabbat. It's not docha et Shabbat. And over here, the baby should have had his milah on Friday, because he's born on Friday. Sounds like this individual is coming to him on the ninth day on Shabbat, and Rava was saying, yes, you do a milah on Shabbat. And then Rava retracted that because he said it wasn't born on Shabbat, it was born on Friday, and therefore Shabbat would not be nidcheit because of brit milah over here. Again, how far out you think this baby is in the case of Rava will be determined by what you think exactly is Chutz L'Prizdor over here. There are Rishonim that want to suggest that Rava's addition to this din of Rav Hoshaya is the fact that Bayit HaChitzon, that area of the woman, is considered to be as if it's left the Prizdor already, and that's enough to be deemed a birth. And if that's the case, then the baby is still internal to the woman, but he believes while it's in the Bayit HaChitzon, you could hear its voice. Or, if you believe that Mechutz L'Prizdor means literally outside of the woman, then all Rava is saying is that that could happen, and you could miss it, even though it really happened, because if the voice of the baby was heard, it clearly exited through the Prizdor and was external, even though you only saw the birth or witnessed the birth much later on Shabbat, and that might have to do with what we discussed before about the thighs of the woman covering over that area. Now the Gemara asks the following question. Oto makom shalisha, that area of the woman, bluahavi or beta starimhavi, that bayit achitzon of the woman, what is the classification of that area? Is that considered to be bluah, which means something that's buried? And as Rashi says over here, tuma bluah is darihi kemisha eina. It's as if the tuma doesn't exist. The Rashmishants on the Mishnayot in Mikvot says, it is because a balua in something that's alive is batel to the live being, which is much more significant, and that's why it's as if it doesn't exist. Whereas the Raviyah believes it's considered as if it's digested in the body, even though it's not physically or actually digested. And therefore, it's tuma blua is like it's non-existent. That means there's no tumat maga, there's no tumat masa, there's no tuma whatsoever associated with it. Oh, beta starim habi. Or is it considered to be beta starim? Now, beta starim is that in order to have tumat maga, the maga has to take place in a place that is exposed, or to something that is exposed. Something that is totally covered up or internal does not have tumat maga. So the question is, over here, the dam inside the woman, in the Bayit HaChitzon, that dam is mitameh both maga and masa. And so when the woman has it inside of her, is it classified as tuma blu'a, which means that it's as if it doesn't exist, there will be no tuma maga, no tuma masa, no tuma at all, until it exits from the woman. Or is it beta starim, which means that you can't have tumat maga, but you can't have tumat masa, which means that if the woman is already Torah, and she has dam and bayit achitzon, that's tameah, then if she walks around with it, then she's carrying it around. And she'll be tameh tumat masa, even though she can't be tameh tumat maga, because the maga is internal. And you can't have tumat maga when it's in beta starim. So the mai nafkamina. So what's the nafkamina? Kagon. Or another scenario is where her friend puts in a nevela into that area. Nevela is mitameh b'magao masa, similar to the damnida that's mitameh b'magao masa. And therefore, iyamar blua via ibhavi. If you said it's blua, tuma blua lo mitama. Period. Iyamar peta starim avi, nehid b'maga lo mitamia. Even though it doesn't have a tumat maga, it's still not b'teila legamrei, as if it doesn't exist. Therefore, b'masa miya mitamia. There would have a tumat masa, and that would be the nafkamina as to whether you classify that area as being a beta starim or a blu'a. Abayi amar blu'a havi. So this is what we noted before. Abayi is of the opinion that that area of the beta chitzon is considered to be blu'a. Rav amar beta starim havi. That it is a beta starim. Again, we noted before that Rava might be only speaking about the outer section of the beta chitzon, the lower part towards the exit of the vaginal canal. That which is in much deeper, he might agree, according to some Rishonim, with the bayit that is blua. Amar Rava Menai Minola, I can prove that to you. Titania, Elam Ibnei Shutumat Beit Astarim Hi. We said in yesterday's daf, when we brought the Breita down with Poletet Shechvat Zera, over there, Rabbi Shimon noted that, why should she be Tmeya if there's Shechvat Zera inside of her? That's Tumat Beit Astarim. The contact between the Shechvat Zera and the woman are happening in a Beit Astarim. Betumat Beit Astarim Lo Mitama. And that doesn't cause tumat maga. Ella, shegzeret hakatuv hi, that she is tmeah. And that's where Rabbi Shimon came to say that it's a gzeret hakatuv, that the woman is tmeah by bia in terms of shechvat zera. So you see that Rabbi Shimon called it a beit hastarim. But baye chada mod kamar. He's giving two reasons. He's saying, chada de tumah blua hi. First of all, it's tumah blua, and it has no impact at all. Vod, afilu im timsalomar tumat beit hastarim hi. Even if you think it's not tumat blua, it's only tumat beit hastarim, eina mitama, it's not mitama because there's only tumat maga, and tumat maga doesn't have impact when it's internal. Elish gzeret hakaduvi, but it's gzeret hakaduv that she is tmeya. So that's one machlok between Abayi and Rava. Rava brings a proof from Rabbi Shimon in the Braita that we brought yesterday. Abayi dismisses it and says, eino chanami, it says beit hastarim, but it's just piling on. It's saying that this is tumat blua, so it's not relevant. Even if you want to say it's to my faith the stream, it still wouldn't be relevant, and it has to be a gzeret agadu. Yivailu, makom nevela tof tahor, blua havi, o beta stream havi. The place where you swallow nevela tof tahor into the beta blia, and it makes you tameh, is that place considered to be a blua place? Or is that considered to be a beta stream? Minchat Chinuch actually questions where exactly is this beta blia for nevela tof tahor. Is it in the area of the throat, where it's deep in, where you can still regurgitate it, but it's deep enough that you get hana, you get the pleasure of swallowing that item? Or is it so deep in the throat that it can't be regurgitated, meaning that it's inside the goof? And that's the question. What does blua mean? Does blua mean simply that it is so deep that it's inside the body, which would mean that it is in an area that you cannot regurgitate? Or is blua over here mean simply that it's in an area that gives you the ana of swallowing, but that doesn't mean it's impossible to regurgitate it. L'may nafkamino, what's the difference? A person puts in the vela deep into your throat over there. What's the din? If it's considered blua, it's too deep. It's batel. It's not mitameh anymore. The individual who had it placed back into the deep into their throat is not tameh. Ela e amar it's beta starim avi. If you say that it is a beta starim, he nami de magalo mitama be masamia mitama. It won't be tameh to my maga, but to my masai would be. And this individual, if he moves, that nevela is in his Beit HaBliyah, that'd be like a masa, and he will be tamei. And once again here, we have a machloki between Abaye and Rava. Abaye Amar Baluavi. He thinks it's Balua. Rava Amar Beit HaStarim Avi. That it is a Beit HaStarim. Amar Abaye Min Aminula. How can I prove it to you? Titania. Yachol Tei Nevela Et Behemat Mitama Begadima Beit HaBliyah. You would think of nevela from a behemah that makes you tamei. If you swallowed it, it would make not only you tamei, but your begadim tamei. Tamalomar, it says in Pashat Emor, nevela vitrefa lo yochal letamava ani Hashem. The tamava, mishen la tuma ela achilata. Something that only has tuma from achila is this true by. Yatstazo, nevela, regular nevela, shetama kodem shiochlena. That it makes you tamei even before you're eating it. Meaning that what the pasuk is telling you is there is a certain type of tumat nevela that is uniquely associated with achila and nothing else. That's true of nevelat of tahor. That's not true of any other nevela. Any other nevela is mitama b'magal masa before you swallow it. So therefore, it's not subject to the din of mitama b'gadema beit abliyah, because it has tumah outside of that swallowing, and therefore it's not subject to this unique din of tumah that's only relevant by swallowing, which is true only by nevelat of tahor. And not other nevelot, which shows you like Abaye that this is tumah bluah, and that's why other nevelot do not convey tumah when they're found in Beit HaBliyah. It says, v'teite b'kavachomer, min nevelat of tahor. Why don't you just learn it out from a kavachomer? Tosafot folk points out that there can't be a real miut, because then how could you bring a kavachomer to override a miut? A miut says it doesn't work. Ela yatzta min she'enu bichlal pasuk zeh. The Ba just tells you that it's not relevant to this pasuk, but not a real or absolute miut. Ma nevela tov tor, she'en la tumah b'chutz, yesh la tumah b'fnim. If nevela b'chutz is mitamei b'magom asa, and nevela tov tor b'chutz is not mitamei at all, yet when you swallow it, it's mitamei you and your begadim. Then nevela, which is mitamei magam asa, even when you touch it, certainly when you swallow it, it should be mitamei you and your begadim. Amar kra ba. The pasuk ends with nevela shevifalo yochal letama ba. Ba is a miut. Ba velo ba acheret. This din, which is uniquely associated with achila, is also uniquely only associated with nevela tov tahor and with no other forms of tumat nevela. Im kein matamad lomar. If that's the case, then back in Vayikra Yud Aleph, in Parashat Shmini, why does it say, if you have a Beima Torah that dies and becomes a Nevela, if you come into contact with it, you are Tamei. If you eat it, not only are you Tamei, but your Begadim are Tamei. If you carry it, not only are you Tamei, but your Begadim are Tamei. So you have three different activities over here. Nigia, Maga, Masa, and Achila. If you just told me that Achila by Nevela doesn't have any impact, then why does it mention the activity of Achila? It's only Maga and Masa that matter. Why are you mentioning Achila at all? The answer to Gemara is, Liten Shiur, Lenogeya, Vilenosei, Koochel. So tell you, what is the Shiur of Maga by Nevela that you are Tamei? What is the Shiur of Masa by Nevela that you're Tamei for? The amount that is problematic when you eat it. Achila by nevela is governed by a kezayit. Ma ochel be kezayit, af no gev no se be kezayit. So just like a kezayit is problematic to eat, not because of tuma, because of the iser, achilat nevela, so too with regards to the world of tuma, kezayit's a problem if you come into contact with it, meaning that a nevela conveys tuma when it's the size of a kezayit, or if you're masa, if you carry a kezayit worth, you're going to be tamei. Tosafot over here asks, how does that exactly work? Because by the achila, it says that you are tamei, litamei begadim. Now that works well for nosei, because nosei is mebegadim begadim. But nogeya, you're only tamei, your begadim are not tamei. So how do you then take the word ochel, and then extrapolate that to the world of nogeya or maga as well? Then Tosafot suggests, had it only been referencing to nosei, it should have let nosei out completely. And so just written maga and ochel. And I would have known that that ochel is really masa, because there is no din of achila that makes you tamei, the tamei begadim. The fact that it also mentions ochel and Nosei tells me that Ochel not only references to Nosei, but also references to Maga. But then Tosafot just leaves as a Tzarechiyun as to why you need the Tumat Begadim by Ochel. If you just mentioned Ochel, even without Tumat Begadim, we would have known this din, because it would have been Kal v'chomer. If it affects Maga, certainly that's the din by Masa. And Tosafot says, in the end, Shema l'shum drasha itzrich. We must need it for some drasha. And then he says, what about Rava? How's Rava going to explain this braita to fit with his position that it's really Tumat Beit Hasdarim and not Tumat Blua? So it says just over here, Kigon Shebeit HaBliya Rachav Kolkach Shelo Yesit Nevela Shetachav Lo Chaveiro. So it's a case where the throat or the area of the Beit HaBliya is so wide that it can be inserted in there without coming into any movement or any contact with the individual. And in that way, he won't be Tamei, because there was no Tumat Maga, because it's Beit HaSdarim. There's also no Tumat Masa, because it's so wide that it went down without ever carrying it or walking with it. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rava, Sheretz Bikomto Tahor, Nevela Bikomto Tamei. If a Sheretz is found in the fold of fat around his belly, so now the belly fat that rolls over on itself, in between those rolls, you find a dead sheretz. Tahor. The person is tahor. If you have a nevela that's found in there, you are a tameh. Sheretz b'komto tahor, because sheretz b'negiyahu dimit tameh. That's because the sheretz only can make stuma through negiyah, not through masa. So therefore, it's a beit hasdarim. It's a place that's not visible. And a place that's not visible, there is no tumat maga. So beit hasdarim la bar magahu. It's a place that's not subject to Tumat Maga. And since Sheretz only is mitameh b'tumat Maga, the person remains tahor. Nevela b'komto, if the nevela, piece of nevela, kazayit of nevela is found in the folds of fat, then tameh. Nehid maga lo mitameh. You're not tameh for Tumat Maga. Nevertheless, b'masa miyom mitameh. You are tameh Tumat Masa, because when you carry it around, you don't need it to be revealed. Beit HaSdarim doesn't have any impact disqualifying Tumat Masa. Therefore, when you walk around with it, that's why you are a tameh. Sheretz mikomto v'chniso la'avir atanur tameh. If a person has a sheretz in the folds of fat, and then he enters into a kli cheretz. Remember that a kli cheretz can come a tameh mitocho from avir, from the airspace internally. Now, if he enters into the airspace of a tanur, of a kli cheretz, with a sheretz that's folded up in his fats, the tanur is tameh, because it's inside the avir of the oven or of the kli cheretz. Gemara says, pshita. Of course, it's internal. It's tumat avir. Why wouldn't it be? Gemara says, mal detema tocho amarachmona. The Torah says that whatever's in the kli cheretz makes it tamei, or whatever's in it becomes tamei, below toch tocho. But not if it's inside of another kli. Kamash malan, that we don't say that over here. Rashi says over here, dela alav toch tocho. This is not considered to be toch tocho, because toch tocho is only in a case where the mouth of the internal kli is above the mouth of the external kli. So if you have a kli cheres that has tuma inside of it, that's inside of another kli cheres, then as long as the mouth of the internal kli cheres is above the mouth of the external kli cheres, it's not mitamei the avir of the outer kli cheres, because that's toch tocho. That's inside of inside something, and it protects it from making the other thing tamei. As opposed to a case where the mouth of the internal kli is inside of the mouth of the external kli, that's still considered to be toko. Because in order to exit the internal kli, it'll have to go into the airspace of the external kli, and that's considered to be toko. So as Rashi says over here, here, the rolls of fat of the individual that have these sherets inside of them, their mouth, their exit, their opening, is not external to the kli cheres. And therefore it's considered to be toko, and not tok toko. Others suggest over here that the issue is not an issue of whether the mouth is outside or inside the kli cheres. It's a question of a kli. A kli can protect against toch tocho, meaning a kli can stop tuma'ah from affecting a kli cheres when it is inside the kli cheres. A person or fat, rolls of fat, can't afford that protection. Toch tocho is only created when it's a kli inside of a kli, not when it's a person inside of a kli. Amar Eish Lakish, kaneh bikomto shozav. If you have a stick, a pole, that is in the folds of the fat of a zav, vezipo et tahor, and with that pole, he managed to move or shake somebody that is tahor, that individual remains tahor. Kana become toshel tahor. Then if the kana is in the folds of the fat of someone that is tahor, vesipo et azav, and somehow he moved with that pole a zav who is tamei, then that individual is tamei. My taima. What's the reasoning for that? Damar kra, the pasuk says, b'chol asher igat bo azav, v'yadav lo shataf b'mayim. Anything that the zav comes into contact with, and his hands have yet to go into the mikveh, they haven't been washed. As Rashi points out, v'yadav lo shataf b'mayim, the lo shataf b'mayim is not relevant to our sugya at all. That's something else that to learn netilat yadayim l'achila from there. The Gemara learns from this, v'chol asher igat bo azav, is not coming to teach about maga hazav, because that is already noted explicitly. So you already have nigiya. So why is there another pasuk that says, "V'chol asher igabo hazav, yadav lo shatav b'mayim, v'chibes b'gadav v'chatz b'mayim etamei ad ha'arev." So why is there another nigiya? So the Gemara learns from that that teaches you about tumat hesed. Sometimes there is a type of nigiya that's not direct contact. That is when the zav moves something, he does hesed. He causes the object to move. So it's as if he's nogeya by it, but he's nogeya it from a distance, not by direct contact. So that hesed to zav has a din like nigiya. And therefore, we learn out of the pasuk that that is hesed to shows up. Shalom matzino lo tuma b'chol ha-Torah kula. We don't have any tuma like this anywhere else in the Torah. Ba'afkei rachmanu b'lashon nigiya. And the Torah expresses tumat hesed by the zav as a nigiya. Lememra, the hesed v'nigiya ki yadav. To teach you that hesed functions like nigiya and just like yadav. Mahatam, yadav teach you me'evrai, only things that are exposed, like your hands have tumat maga. Avalcha, so too, tumat hesed only has tumat when it's exposed like your hands. So that's the way Rashi learns. Rashi says that anywhere else in the Torah, we only find that if the person carries the Tumah, then that makes the individual Tameh. We never find the other way around when the person who's Tameh carries that which is Tahor, that they become Tameh. And that is this Tumat Heset over here, where the Zav causes movement of another object, he makes them Tameh. So now, the Heset of Zav is learned out from the expression of Negiyah, and the fact that it mentions over here, Yadav, juxtaposed to Nigiya, teaches you that Nigiya is only relevant when it's Nigiya Bigalui. And since Hesed is expressed as Nigiya, therefore Hesed has the same din as Nigiya, whereby it only is relevant when it is exposed, when it is Bigalui. And Rashi says this becomes paradigmatic in nature, and that all Tumot Maga, we learn from Zav over here, just like Zav, Nigiya has to be Bigalui, so to any other Tumah that has Tumat Maga, has to be Bigalui. Tosafot disagrees with that and says that the Etzem Lashon Nigiya means coming into contact. Coming into contact, or the word Nigiya, means contact with something that is exposed. And therefore the absolute meaning of the word Nigiya is that. And therefore, Tosafot is left with a problem as to why you have to mention Yadayim over here by Zav, if by definition the word Nigiya means exposed. So Tosafot in the end suggests maybe you needed the Yadayim to be Megala Milta, to teach you that the word Nigiya means that it is exposed. And once you already determined or defined the word Nigiya as being exposed, then any other time you were to use the word Nigiya, the word means coming into contact with something that is exposed. Now, this has a nafkamina with regards to Hesed. And that is because we just discussed two types of Hesed. We had one type of Hesed where it happened from the person who was Tahor to the Zav, and one where it happened from the Zav to the person that is Tahor. This din of Hesed is only written by the case of B'chol Asher Yigabo Azav, when the Zav is making contact. This Nigiya we said is Hesed, that means it's the Hesed of the Zav. When the Zav is Mesit someone else, then it has to be like a Nigiya, it has to be exposed. Therefore over here, where the pole is inside the rolls of fat of the Zav, and through that pole, he moves somebody that is Tahor, that person remains Tahor. Because even though there was Hesed that was done, the Hesed originated from a location that is not Bigalui on the Zav. It was in the rolls of fat of the Zav, and therefore that Hesed is not classified as Hesed that can be Mitameh. And that's why the tahor person remains tahor. When it's reversed and the tahor person has the stick or pole inside the rolls of his fat, and through that pole he moves the individual who's tameh, the zav over here, there we don't have the din of hesed that comes from negiyah, because over here you're touching the basar zav, you're coming into contact with the zav. But hesed of a tahor individual of a zav is not learned from this pasuk. That hesed is really a derivative of masa, and that derivative of masa makes him tameh tumat masa, and we already saw that tumat masa does not have the limitations of tumat maga, and therefore there's no requirement that it be bigaloi. Given that, if the person who's tahor has this pole inside of the rolls of his fat where it's not exposed, and it does hesed of the zav, he will be tameh, because there hesed is not governed by the requirement for galoi or the requirement of negiyah. And therefore here, the person who's tahor, that's moving the zav with the pole that's in his rolls of fat of the ish tahor, will be tameh, because it's if he was, no say, the zav when he did the hesed of the zav. And that's what explains the difference in the din that Reish Lakish brought down. Rashi brings a second explanation which says that the issue of galoi has to do with the zav himself, and the zav tuma has to be begaloi. And therefore in the case where the staff is touching the zav in the rolls of fat, it's not touching him in a place that is exposed, and therefore when it comes into contact with the tahor, it has no impact on him. Whereas in the reverse case where the staff or the pipe, the pole, is in the rolls of fat of the tahor, and it touches the zav, it's touching the zav in a makom galoi. Therefore, the zav is able to make the pole tameh, and then the pole makes the person that is tahor tameh. That's a different explanation. Rashi brings it and says, the shibushu, it's a complete mistake. There are a number of questions or underminings of this position, one of which is the problem that if the zav touches the pole becomes a rishon the tuma. If it's a rishon the tuma, it cannot be mitameh the tahor. That's first of all. Second of all, the piping itself can't become tameh because it's pshute kliyetz, and flat pieces of wood are not mikabel tuma. So over there, it's not an issue as well. Unless it is a piping, then you could solve that problem. And on top of that, what does that have to do with hesed? The lashon hesed has nothing to do with maga. Hesed is a particular type of activity. And lastly, v'kol hashei gabo azav is only relevant unidirectionally when the zav touches the tahor, not when the tahor touches the zav, and therefore how can you bring the limud from that pasuk for both directions over here? And for that reason, Rashi rejects that explanation. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph.